like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. This is episode 54, the midweek wrap, where we basically just talk about certain issues that are going on, different topics, could go any direction. Today, John and I get into Donald Trump's comments during the dedication and presentation, rather, to the Navajo Wind Talkers, using the word Pocahontas, and under the picture of Andrew Jackson. We then get into tax reform in the middle class, and then we follow it up with a little bit of net neutrality from two podcasts ago, but really talking about comments made by high-profile individuals like Mark Cuban and Ted Cruz. So that's what we're in store for. As always, if you want more from the Mod State team, go to modstate.com. You'll have all of our links to our social media platforms. You can find me and Nate Welline on Facebook and modstate_Nate at Twitter. And of course, you can always reach out to us on podomatic.com. You can find us on iTunes and reach out to us on any of the social media platforms. So with that, let's get John on the line.
You want the envelope? There. You take it. It's all yours. You kill all three of them for nothing. You greenhorn, you blockheaded jackass, you nincompoop.
All right, we're back, dude. How's it going?
Well, assuming, you know, there's no more chances and
no more audio gaffes. No more audio issues from my on my part.
Well, it's really easy for me to point the finger when I'm the one not actually handling the audio engineering. I'm allegedly all these months I've been conjuring up a video presentation, but we've yet to see that, so maybe it's all fantasy.
Well, speaking of video presentation, I did manage to purchase some videoing equipment over Black Friday, so hopefully that brings us one step closer to video and more YouTube videos and podcasting videos. I don't know what to call them.
I don't know if there's a decided upon term yet. I know I've heard videocast before, but I don't know if it's like, yes, that's the term.
Well, we're going to do videos. So until someone comes
we're gonna
up
be
with
on
a,
YouTube.
We're going to be there. We're going to relaunch. Hopefully what I also got a new computer over Black Friday because this one is slowly falling apart.
I did
because sooner or later, mid podcast, this one is going to collapse and implode.
So what's this going to be, a tax write off when you get a Surface from the company? I mean, Jesus.
But man, you can never go wrong with more than one screen. Let me tell you that. It's the truth. But it's okay.
It depends on what's on the screens, I suppose. But I mean, Jesus.
Very true. But listen, I am hoping to record little snippets at the beginning of the podcast, whether that's just the intro, and then put them on Instagram in place of memes, unless there is a meme that's completely warranted to then promote the
good
podcast.
For you.
So then people can see my ugly mug. I should probably dress up nicer. That would be a good start.
Well, you know, on the video cast, I mean, you do what you will, but as I've told you before, if I die, I'll die well dressed. I'll be insured
indeed,
to die.
You will be.
But hey, you want to dress like the progressive you are, you knock yourself out.
Oh, I like it. Well, I apologize for getting started late.
Well, RFK would be in a shirt and tie.
Ooh, yeah, you're right.
Are you really going to let a Nixon Republican tell
you know what?
Kennedy?
I like to think that RFK would dress in what was appropriate for the time. So if he was in a...
The Kennedys will never go out of style.
No.
This is coming... All right. I'll tell you this. I know it cut you off, and it's very, very rude. But you'll appreciate this. coming from my mother, who, you know, to the 7 billion people on the planet that don't know her, coming up in New Orleans as she was, conservative, and met my father at a private, you know, Christian high school. Both of their families ended up divergently being Nixon Republicans, and she said it didn't matter, you know. And her, you know, she was born, I think, in 52. She's going to kill me for saying this, but 52, 53. But the point is...
He meant 63, 70, 73.
Yeah, sure, 83. But she was in grade school when JFK was, when John Fitzgerald Kennedy was president, right? And she said it really was true. They were Camelot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Jackie O, Jacqueline Onassis, and then RFK coming after, you know, they were crisp, they were well-dressed, and of course some of the later things didn't come about until later.
Hence, of course.
The term. But I don't like people besmirching President Nixon like that, so I'm not going to do it here. But her point was, you know, no, they were crisp and polished, whether you liked them or not. They will always be in style.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
and look at this. Her saying that.
Yeah, look at all the pop songs. It's still reference them. Well, I mean,
right.
They're still a prominent family. But yeah, I think my parents used to call them the America's royalty.
Oh, they're not the only ones. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, no, your parents are very much correct in that. And no, so I think RFK, not that either one of the men we both admire is here to speak for themselves today, but I think RFK would probably be right up there with Dick Nixon and having shirt and tie on. Just the knot might be tugged a little to the left and the hair would be messed up. Whereas, as we referenced before in this podcast, Richard Nixon couldn't even sit down in the Oval Office
without
with his coat unbuttoned. What's going to happen?
I'll try to bring a little of that Kennedy flair on my...
I think you have that Kennedy flair, but...
Thanks. All right. Dust my shoulders off. I was saying before we got started...
Oh, dust your shoulders off.
Thanks. I'm sorry we got started late. Literally right down the block, right down the street from us as we were driving home from Sarah's office, there was this huge police barricade that had us all detoured, and apparently there is some suspect hole up in a house, and there's police helicopters everywhere and roadblocks and press staging areas, and so I got a little bit behind, but that's exciting.
Well, I mean, you are in Aurora.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't forget where I live.
It's not lost on you.
Don't forget where I live. That is for sure. But
not that anybody in New Orleans can really point a finger about gun crime.
I don't know what happened, but more to be seen. So anyway, we've got a few things to get into today, and we might as well just dive straight in to okay. So I never thought Pocahontas was a racial slur, a degradation, whatever you want to call it. But somehow the president of, because Pocahontas, all I know is the my unfortunate, shallow, ignorant memory and knowledge of Pocahontas is her somehow working with the first English individuals
she
who got
not
here.
Sacagawea.
She was not Sacagawea. They made
the coin.
They got a coin with her, and for a good reason. But and then of course the Disney movie with the talking raccoon and tree, and that's really all I really know about Pocahontas. Probably all I really need to know about Pocahontas. But yet somehow, our president of the United States manages to make it. If not, it's not necessarily that it's racial, but it was so ill-timed in such a ridiculous,
ill-staged
forum to call Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas whilst he is honoring the three last remaining Navajo wind talkers.
Well, bear in mind here, not to besmirch the rest of the story, this is not the first time he's called her that.
Very true.
That's what everybody's kind of forgetting about this. But basically what happened,
which is it's ridiculous, though.
Somebody said, you know what, you can't turn this into an offensive ordeal. And Trump went, hold my beer.
Exactly. oh yeah, yeah, here, hold this, watch me. And on top of that, he was like, no, not only will you hold my beer and watch me do this, I'm going to do it underneath the picture of Andrew Jackson. Now,
because why not?
Because why not honor the Navajo Windtalkers under the watchful eye of the Trail of Tears instigator? Again, I don't mean to.
Do you really think I was wrong in what I said before the podcast about who would be better?
You know what? Okay, let's make this analogy. Who you were?
I'm not going to say it.
I think you should, because this goes on to like a Roy Moore situation where he says slavery is like a little better than gay marriage.
Oh.
This is sort of that analogy. So I think you should go ahead. If you don't want to, you don't have to.
All right. My father was born in the North, but I was born in the South. Okay. All right. So I made the statement before the podcast in our precast conversation that President Trump would have done better here by saying, you know what? Today, we're going to honor the one and only president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, because the last two Confederate generals to surrender, whether anybody knows this or not, the last two Confederate Army generals to surrender were Native American, the very last of which was Sandy Wadey, who I believe was Cherokee. Anybody, please feel free to correct me. But that would have been more apropos than, oh, the guy that, you know, that Trail of Tears? Let's go on that.
I don't know who was getting ready for this ceremony and didn't just, why wouldn't you, if that was your job, why wouldn't you Google every picture that is
would
hanging?
That have been better?
For the sake of this podcast and for the sake of
Jefferson Davis?
Yes, it would have been better than Andrew Jackson. Well, look, I think you could probably make the argument that a lot of the first presidents in the late 1700s, early 1800s probably weren't that buddy-buddy with the Native Americans. So
I think they weren't that progressive when it came to slavery either.
Exactly. Thomas Jefferson. So I don't know what to say. I think you probably picked a pretty good.
It would have been better to say, you know what, we're going to keep Jefferson Davis Parkway like it's named. Now, Andrew Jackson, you come here for a second. It would have been better, right?
Probably. Probably. But anyway, I digress. How
does Elizabeth Warren get into this Pocahontas thing?
Well, the backstory there is I think she, for some reason or another, had made claim to Native American heritage in her past and may not have actually been. Somehow there was a Native American connection with Elizabeth Warren, and he just started calling her Pocahontas. I don't know where he started calling or when he started calling her Pocahontas, but it, regardless of that at all, probably not the classiest move while you are, again, honoring the Navajo Windtalkers.
I mean, this is a day. Let's think about this. These are individuals that made immense sacrifices to help, yes, their nation's troops. But let's remember this, okay? Native Americans, it is illegal to draft them. They are not required to serve.
I did not know that.
That's true, and I only found that out. I didn't know that until one of my neighbors, who I actually talked to you about him while you were visiting me here in New Orleans, but I'm sure you remember the two Native American brothers that I mentioned that lived upstairs above me. Well, one of them actually showed me his paperwork because he's wanting to join the Marines, and it had that in there that, you know, just reminding them, look, you are not obligated, nor will you ever be obligated to serve, you know, the United States Armed Forces. And I went, whoa, I didn't know that. We're talking about guys that, I mean, I guess technically speaking, you can conscript anybody if you want, but under lawful circumstances, they cannot be conscripted.
Well, their story is a pretty incredible story.
Incredible story.
Yeah, to be able to, I mean, it's actually pretty ingenious to use indigenous language in your codes for a quick code. But I just looked it up, and she, apparently Elizabeth Warren did claim that she was Native American and wasn't. So the fact that he continues. Yeah, not the best
look. Not that justifies it.
Not the best look, but definitely a not as good look when you are using that term Pocahontas in that context.
I had forgotten this. I didn't know that. See, and you know what? Somebody's probably going to fact check me and say, but in the federal code, section 69, clause 13, they can be drafted. You know, somebody's going to cock this all up.
That's why we have a Twitter. So you can just go and correct us. But anyway, I don't know.
I had forgotten that she did that.
Yeah. But still.
Poor form. But this was poorer.
Form. For the president, maybe not. Maybe someone needs to take him aside. Come on, man. Wait. Don't.
It's like, okay, I get it. Don't. She's.
Yeah, don't.
72 going on 122.
You don't. But. You don't got to do that, man. It's.
Don't do this.
Yeah, don't. You're the president. President of the United States.
John Kelly has got to be working on the biggest ulcer since John Boehner.
Well, and then I feel sorry for Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who had to come out and basically just lie through her teeth. He didn't mean it this way. He didn't this. He didn't that. Shut up. The guy's an instigator. The guy is a troll. He's made a profession out of it.
You wouldn't do that for $15,000 a month?
I could probably do a lot of things for $15,000 a month, to be honest with you.
I kid.
I'll give you that.
My answer would be no. No, I want to sleep at night.
You know what? Sean Spicer was like, I'm good.
He was hiding out in the bushes. Jesus.
Oh, boy. Well, I am amazed.
You know, Pocahontas and Sacagawea is like, all right, shut up. Enough, all right.
Enough.
I'm sorry.
No.
We came here.
Anyway.
We weren't the first.
No.
The French and Germans came a little later.
Yep.
Disclaimer.
Anyway, I'm getting through some tea here. Sorry for my slurping on microphone. But, yeah.
If you
anyway.
Have any tea, it better be in the air. Fumigated.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
No, you smell what I'm stepping in.
Yeah. This is the liquid type. All right, man. You know what? We talked about tax reform when we were coming up when we were coming up with the framework for this, we talked about taxes, and I didn't want to, first off, come out swinging with net neutrality because some people might be tired of that, but we are going to talk about it. You brought up a very poignant, almost argument to tax reform, and that is the American people, the people that should overwhelmingly benefit from tax reform, that i.e. the middle class and those who are below the poverty line.
The people you hear both major parties talk the most about.
Yeah. That's the thing, man. I think where everyone's struggling, and I think for the average American that hears issues about taxes, that there's almost this already decided view in their head that it isn't going to actually do anything to benefit them.
And why they would think that?
Exactly. And I think people just tune out because it's so complex. And obviously the media news, you know, the gore sells, the bad stuff sells, and I mean that in the context of, hey, look at, they're putting in a tax incentive or a tax break for parking their private jets, or the 1% are going to benefit from this overwhelmingly. I think the average American's like, yeah, man, I know, and I'm tuning out. But you brought up something. You said, if I could sit stand in an auditorium at a podium and present three things to the American people that would benefit them, that you would get a standing ovation. And it was funny because Sarah walked by the studio, and when we were talking about student debt, and she literally pointed at herself, and I said, I know, you're one of those individuals who carries an ungodly amount.
And who burdensome. Is this, the Sarah? You speak of Sarah Connor. I mean,
the girlfriend, Sarah.
I just wanted to clarify. I just
Yeah. No, that is her name. I guess I have never said her name on the podcast. Sorry, Sarah, if you didn't want your identity.
Maybe you have. Maybe she doesn't want to be associated with us, or yeah. But anyway, please continue.
Oh, no. So what I would like you to do is elaborate on those sort of tenets that I think would capture the middle class or middle Americans, and I mean middle Americans from above the poverty line to what is the defined middle class, $200,000 a year.
Bottom 85% of the country.
Yeah, exactly. So
you said it best. I wish that I had 3 points to fulfill that with. I don't recall, but there's all this discussion on tax reform. Where's the money going? And it was really just kind of an offhanded figure I threw out. But why not say all these foreign wars that the vast majority of the country is opposed to? I'm not talking about airstrikes into Yemen and all that. I'm talking about boots on the ground, standing occupation of countries that don't want us there. Sure, maintain your air bases. Again, but all of that. Reduce the DOD budget by $100 billion a year and say, no. We're not talking about your personnel departments. We're not talking about your health care. We're not talking about TRICARE. $100 billion from the overall war budget, and put that over the next decade as a bailout of the middle class in the semblance of eradicating federal student debt. Mm-hmm. And then when you're done with that, put it towards state student debt. And two things here, and maybe this is where the full three comes from. Maybe I'll fulfill you in prophecy here. But number one, there is no two ways about this, about how much money that will put back into the economy. Okay, when literally, I don't even know the figure. It's upwards of $1 trillion. I know, in student loan debt, and hundreds of millions in default, right? We're talking about hundreds of dollars a month in the pockets of everyday Americans to put back into the economy. Whatever it is they're buying, it doesn't matter, okay? It's not like President Trump has from day one ranted about, hey, we're going to have people buying this specific good when they have more money. He hasn't done that. So it frankly doesn't matter what I'm talking about here. Fair is fair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so more money back into the economy. But the bigger point here is, and I'm not just picking on the Republicans here. I'm talking in general. A lot of advocates for tax reform and then budgetary reform say, oh, well, that's fine. But we're not. Oh, so you're okay with doing a bailout of the banks that created the 2008 financial crisis by instituting or engaging in usury, subprime mortgage, and then you bailing, the taxpayers bailing them out again. You're in favor of GM and Chrysler still being in business, but you're not in favor of bailing out the students.
Yes, the backbone.
Do I exaggerate?
No. I don't, I agree.
Did I hit all that?
Yeah, you absolutely did. And there are small things that we can do to lessen the burden for average Americans. And it doesn't have to be in the form of just a straight tax cut, because you can reduce spending in other departments, i.e. the DOD. And I mean, even just TRICARE. I mean, you and I had TRICARE, and so we can sit here and talk to some sort of authority in TRICARE, which is the it's the military's medical system. There are no copays paid.
Same thing as Prudential, right? Ish. Which is I forget who it was. Anyway, sorry, that's point.
the what it is in a nutshell is free dental, free vision, free medical, PTOT, you name it, across the board, it's free. And that's for, you know,
free.
Now, there are no copays. There are no...
Meaning you paid into it with your ass.
Dependents, children, I think that there's... And we've talked about this before with a few of my friends who have also worked in TRICARE. I mean, we both did. But even just reducing...
Now it's changed. There's a copay for dental for dependents.
Is there now? So... Which is good. And I think there should be a small copay across the board. And even doing something like that reduces the spending that goes into these programs. And I know we're looking for blanketed solutions that are, you just put the wet rag over it and it fixes the problem. But
does it have chloroform on it?
Yeah, exactly. Put it all to sleep. But I think I'm kind of jumping around here, but I really, the point with TRICARE is the spending that goes into the DoD and what we can do to fix that. The other is the sort of hypocrisy of what we're willing to do for just certain institutions and certain people who, quote unquote, are too big to fail. And as far as I'm concerned, and maybe it's me on my soapbox, but middle America is too big to fail. The amen. Average American.
Can I get an amen to that?
Right.
Let's go back. Let's pause. Let's go back to Detroit City. Okay. Let's go back to Detroit, Michigan. And just folks out there, Mr. Vellon knows this. I don't say Detroit City to be a jerk. I actually like
that's
Detroit.
What it is.
Well, I mean, I say it that way because James Brown said it that way in Living okay. in America. Gotcha. I say it out of all due respect. But let's go back to when AMC, and I'm not talking about the channel, failed. American Motors. Okay, they created cars greatly named like the Gremlin.
Yeah, you're right.
Their answer to the Mustang and the Charger was...
We seem to have lost John here for a moment.
Alabama, yeah, exactly. Alabama State Highway Patrol used the Javelin. Okay.
So it was the Javelin was the response to the Mustang.
And yes.
Yes.
Pardon me, sorry.
You broke up just for a moment, so I filled the gap.
My apologies. So the point is, when AMC went out, yeah, the Jeep is the only living embodiment of AMC now. It's now owned by Chrysler. But the thing is, when AMC went out, there wasn't this, oh my God, there's a collapse going on. Now, granted, it wasn't GM or Chrysler. But I'd like to posit this, and I think I've said this before early on in one of the episodes of the podcast, but if GM and Chrysler had been allowed to collapse, like any free enterprise system would allow, right? So you don't think that men like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs at the time, and I don't know, even Mark Cuban,
yeah,
for example, might have said, hey, there's a ready workforce of over 200,000 people. I think that's correct, right, with those two companies combined?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a pretty fair estimate.
Okay, it's in the six figures. So we've got a ready labor force here and an obviously open car market here. What do y'all say about putting a few billion together and creating a car company? I mean, do you see what I'm getting at here, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea of free market capitalism and enterprise. And
yes. So those individuals that clearly have the capital, the liquid capital, to get involved in this sort of, even if it's not liquid, even if they have to sell their wealth in real estate, their wealth in the stock market, to invest in such a venture, they do it. Okay, Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys, Tom Benson of the New Orleans Saints, the Morrows of the New York Giants, the Rooneys of the Pittsburgh Steelers, mm-hmm. they'd have gotten it done.
There's
a massive market there open. Oh, but the American people that we are going to bitch and moan about throughout the campaign trail, both major parties, don't stand here lying to me.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, so sorry. That's government overreach to bail y'all out. So sorry.
Well, and I don't know if the thought process at the time was, look, we will have this labor force that effectively won't be employed. It's going to take who knows how long it will take to create, whether it's the Bill Gates of the world, the Teslas, the Mark Cubans of the world, to create a company and then build up the labor force again, do training, etc. Maybe that was the thought process.
The labor force was there.
But it was there, and the infrastructure was there, and the companies were all there. It wasn't like you had to reinvent the wheel.
Truth be told, they would have probably had to they would have had to liquidate. But I can't guarantee it, all right? I would be willing to bet they would have gotten refinanced through the private market. I'm sorry.
I don't believe
they would have gone out of business.
If they could have been refinanced. Now, because the banks were under at the same time. So,
okay, but that wasn't direct. That was not inherently tied. But right, let's not get off on semantics.
Well,
as far as finance issues go. The point is, the capital is here. Mm-hmm. It was here, and it is here.
So
and these same individuals that are behind that too big to fail, like, we can't forget student loan debt. No, that's Yeah, it's way too big for Uncle Sam to get involved in.
That you can't even file bankruptcy for, by the way.
Oh, you can file bankruptcy, but guess what's going to follow you? All the way to the grave, mm-hmm. your student loan debt.
Which is, when you really think about that, anything else, even a company like GM, Chrysler, the banks, a company that you own.
Atari.
Anything can go bankrupt. But you, as the taxpaying citizen who can put your money to bail out banks and GM, Chrysler, you cannot file for bankruptcy with the debt that you carry.
In the 1970s, people forget about that one.
Yeah, exactly.
New York City, 1970s. Ungovernable, they called it.
So I think what the major point here is that it's time to bail out the average American. It's time.
I have no point. I'm merely an agent of chaos. I'm simply pointing out the blatant, vulgar hypocrisy here. Okay. If you're going to be against bailouts, cool. Let New York City burn in the 70s. Let GM and Chrysler sink into the dump.
Mm-hmm. Okay? So do you think, and this might be going down an avenue that is a little off topic, but do you think that, especially during the midweek wrap, do you think that part of the narrative that was pushed to bail these banks out, to bail these auto companies out, is a product of who the administrations and or the lobbyists and those who control a lot of the policy that happens in DC? Do you think because of those individuals that are there, that pushes that narrative more than, we'll just say, quote unquote, helping the middle class, because there's no connection to the middle class or the average American in those circles?
God almighty, that's a loaded.
Let's just say
Alpha Foxtrot.
let's say that 50% of Congress and 50% of the Senate were actual, and they are Americans, but average Americans like you and I, or the guy that was off the line. Or
say Congress, let's say representatives and senators who are getting $50,000 a year.
Exactly. That fair point. Do you think, and it's not a stump question, but do you think that might have had a different effect? Or let's just say those individuals who were around Obama at the time, you know, who were billionaires, they were Harvard lawyers.
In all fairness. 2008, before President Obama took office, was when the auto bailout occurred.
That's true. That is true. That did happen under Bush. I would just, you can make it Obama, you can make it Bush. It doesn't really matter. I think that
the circles, point is the American people were lied to.
Yeah.
Right. And it came through. It wasn't simply, and there, I'm going to offer a very minute defense here of the U.S. Congress in the sense that they were aided and abetted by the auto industry. Anybody remember the Bob Dylan voiceover for, was it Chrysler during the Super Bowl? At some points, Bob Dylan, I think during a Super Bowl around that time, did a voiceover. I think it was Chrysler. Could have been GM, I'm not sure. But the point is, we were told, oh, that's American, buy American. All right, good for them. But at the end of the day, it was sold as this red meat. Well, you got to be behind the bailouts, right? You can't let GM and Chrysler go under.
Meanwhile, and I don't know if it happened at GM and Chrysler, but we look at the banks who got a bailout as well, and those CEOs turned around and got bonuses after the bailout to protect talent, to retain talent. That's called talent. Mm-hmm. The military has this called the Office of Retention.
but Bernie Madoff's in prison.
I don't know, man. It's
absurd. And this is where we get into, I'm sure people are going, okay, this is a little conspiracy theory line. But really, think about this. So this industry, and now mind you, General Motors has had, and Chrysler to some extent with Voyager vans, but they've had massive contracts with the federal government, all right, to sell vehicles.
I see where you're going.
Well, okay. I mean, so you follow that along. So really, at the end of the day, it's the bottom 85% of this country. It's the middle America's job. And the middle class that both of these two major parties whine and moan and complain about, which really at the end of the day, it's like, y'all don't give a damn about us.
No, I think it's the first group of people that it's like, I don't, when a push comes to shove, it's like, what can they actually do? What are they going to do? Elect someone else? It's almost like there's this weird safety net or illusion in Washington.
That's just it. They don't allow a runoff from the presidential ticket.
No.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So that's just it. They've got their own set of monopoly. What would that be? A biopoly?
I guess. Yeah. Biopoly.
I don't even know. I'm probably professing my own ignorance here. But at the end of the day, they've got their own system worked out. Again, not trying to get conspiracy theorists here, but the American people have been lied to. And at the end of the day, like with the banks, oh, well, that's okay. You guys can just bail us out. And yeah. The banks can get away scot-free with usurious interest rates, seizing properties, and then, oh, we'll just sell. Oh, by the way, that's something we didn't mention before. When the banks resold those profits, do you think for a second that resold those properties from the 2008 housing crisis, do you think for a second that those profits got reinvested into the budget, or do you think they went to the banks? I'll let you take a guess.
I think my first guess would be the banks, but I might not be. I might not be right. Exactly. And on top of that, it just goes back to what we were saying on the other podcasts. When you have these same individuals who are making millions and millions of dollars a year and then putting those profits offshore and untaxed, or creating shell companies throughout the world, which will then be funneled back into companies like in Panama that we were talking about, they're not giving their fair share back into the overall crisis that is America. So they're getting bailed out and then not reinvesting that money in the first place. I get so frustrated. I can't articulate anything. I have trouble.
It's an infuriating topic because, of course, the minute you start articulating something like this, I mean, even someone like myself, pretty obvious free enterprise economist or economic thinker rather, is getting lumped in with Bernie Sanders, and I'm going, no, I'm in favor of a flat tax, the same rate for corporations across the board, and then a separate rate, the same for individuals across the board, above the poverty line, with no loopholes.
No loopholes.
Sorry. And, oh, yes, you are. As I've said ad nauseum on previous podcasts, yes, you are going to repatriate your extra national profits, or we'll come and take it.
Yeah.
So we're going to have fairness. By God, we're going to have fairness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm sorry. You suck at your job, you can lose it. You suck at running your company, guess what? It can crash and burn just like the rest of them.
Yeah, that's not even...
Why are the American taxpayers in the dole for your insufficiencies?
It's not even partisan. It's a bipartisan American issue. Unfortunately, it's hard to figure out what we can do about it. But like,
who was the bailout for Atari in 1984?
Or any major company that... I mean, look at Sears, for example, that's going under slowly. I mean,
won't end now, that one.
No, it won't.
Like, we've been talking about this since you and I actually met each other for Sears and Kmart. It's like, oh my God.
I think... And I'll try to make this segue, but it makes you wonder.
You make the sexiest segues. Thanks, dude.
Oh, well, let me try not to butcher this one here.
It really matches your eyes.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm blushing over here. It makes you wonder when someone in a powerful, well-connected position makes certain statements. And it's hard to flesh out what the actual motive is behind it. And I think that goes along with those in Washington as well. When they say something that's well-meaning, whether there's meat to it or not, i.e. we're here to help the middle class, well, that's a good message, but where's the delivery? One Mark Cuban had an interesting tweet just recently about net neutrality.
The owner of the NBA Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, of among a businessman with many ventures, I could imagine.
Or a disco thief back in his college days. Yeah. He doesn't want to claim now.
Well, whatever, man. He did it.
So he's staying alive.
He said, do net neutrality proponents realize that continuing the rules as is effectively puts, Donald Trump in charge of internet and its future? So that's the question he proposes. Do you realize?
Oh, so this was over Twitter.
It was over Twitter. Yes. Even better. So his question is, do you realize or do individuals realize that the rules as is keep Donald Trump in charge of the internet and its future? So
Where to start?
Yeah, okay, so Mark Cuban, you're a smart guy. And I obviously
he knows better.
I'm a little perplexed trying to unlock this.
On which part?
Who he thinks controls the internet. Now, funny enough, Ted Cruz made a similar comment. He said net neutrality is the Obamacare for the internet. The internet should.
When did he say that?
He said this in 2014. He says the internet should not operate at the speed of the government. So Mark Cuban, who is a Donald Trump critic, Ted Cruz, who may not be a Donald Trump supporter, but certainly is a conservative supporter, both.
But he supports the Constitution.
He does.
And he says it just slow enough that idiots like you and I can understand.
The Constitution.
Yeah, it's too fast.
So it is too fast. It's that northern coming on, just trying to spit it all out.
We got to slow this podcast down, but for the sake of everybody more literate than me, continue.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. But these two individuals are effectively saying the same thing. One is lashing out against Donald Trump. The other is making a snide comment at Obama. But they both are saying that for whatever reason, the government is in charge of the internet right now, owns the internet, and its future is at stake whilst it is in the hands of the government.
Senator Cruz would probably be one of the first individuals to say this transition, if allowed, would result in new world order.
Probably.
Like, okay, so which is it? Well, there's no probably. I don't know that he personally would say that, but I would be willing to bet a significant sum of change I don't have that many of his supporters would. They'd say, you see?
Yeah.
The UN.
So I think the real question for me is, what exactly is Mark Cuban's angle here? Because I give him credit that he is a smart individual and that he probably knows more about the topic than just what he said by the government controls the internet. And so
either he was drunk or he was willfully misleading people.
What I do know is that critics of Donald Trump are probably, I mean, left critics, so progressives, liberals, who are critics of Donald Trump, are probably more likely to support someone like Mark Cuban, who is a leader, a well-connected, powerful individual who is anti-Trump. So when he says something like, hey, Trump owns the internet, man, we need to take that out of the hands of the government, that people would jump on board with that and say, he's right. We can't keep net neutrality as it is because it is in the hands of this tyrant, and he could turn it off. He could just turn off.
This is where we kick the clutch, pull everything into neutral, and just look in the rearview mirror and see where I would assume we're going to provide the ICANN website, ICANN.org.
Mm-hmm.
When we listen to this podcast, by all means, look it up. Since 1998, this transition has been in place. My history might be a little hazy with my multiple concussions and all, but I think Bill Clinton was president then.
That sounds about right.
So, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama. No, Donald Trump does not have fiat power over the internet.
Yes. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure why he wouldn't be. I guess the president's, he is the guy that calls Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas during a ceremony to honor Navajo wind talkers, but to believe that Donald Trump has his finger on the internet like he does the nuclear codes is a little misleading and or just false. And you did mention ICANN. And I think it
I can do a lot of things.
And I think it
I'll be
worths,
here all night.
I think it worths mentioning what ICANN
is. I'm sorry.
And who ICANN is. Sorry, I was sipping tea. And that was an ill-timed tea sippage.
You need to be all right. Whatever.
I'm just not on top of it tonight.
You're not smoking tea. That's the point. Continue.
Yes. Okay, so ICANN, and I will put a link to this in the show notes. And yeah, maybe it sounds like I'm smoking tea tonight. I don't know, man. So
you may as well be guilty of it.
Yeah.
Per Richard Nixon. I may as well have done the
might
shit.
Might as well have done the shit.
May as well burn the tapes.
So ICANN is a non-profit organization, and it's made up of government organizations, members of private companies, internet users from all over the world, and they have direct control over what they call IANAs, or Internet Assigned Number, or the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. And it's the body that manages web domains and name systems. They have a really, I would say, dare I say, comprehensive website.
It's pretty in-depth and not in a confusing congressy new word, but it's not in a congress-like way where it's like, okay, well, how does this, you know, how do you repeal the Propaganda Act and the military spending bill? No, it's not in that kind of way. It's like, hey, you have questions on this? Here's your 12 seconds. I mean, I spent hours on this website because I was concerned. And I came away from it going, Ted Cruz, swear to God. You know, I mean, you know, all that time for nothing.
Yeah.
But seriously, we come down here at this point. This has been in the works for 19 plus years. So it's kind of maybe, as I mentioned before the podcast, maybe this is Mark Cuban's backhanded way of, in fact, putting his money or his, well, putting his mouth where his mouth is, if you will, but saying he's going to pledge to run for the presidency. And so I don't even know.
I don't know either.
This is why I used to wonder why in the early 2000s, my father's from Pittsburgh and his lifelong, yes, however sad, Pirates fan. I wondered why they didn't allow, and this is a true story, why the owners of Major League Baseball voted down Mark Cuban and said, no, you may not buy the Pittsburgh Pirates. A couple of times I kind of wondered, like, gee, why? Now I'm going,
Yeah.
That old boys club sensed a couple of screws loose.
Maybe. I think it, who knows what his motive is to say that. Maybe it's Occam's razor and it's just ill-informed.
Oh.
But.
That was sexy.
Thanks. But when you talk about the government controlling the internet or having its finger on the internet, I think people tend to look at a place like China, which does overwhelmingly censor their internet. But in order to make any governmental changes, like let's say that for whatever reason, Congress and the Senate decided that we need an internet tax, and it's now a utility and it needs to be taxed as such. The loops that it would need to go through the House, then to the Senate, maybe kick back to the House, then back
States
to the Senate.
Tried.
Then goes to the president for a veto or a signature. Then goes to the Supreme Court to uprule its constitution or its whether it holds constitution or not. Its constitutionality, rather. So it isn't as if Donald Trump just presses a button and then every internet web page is redirected to DonaldTrump.com.
Oh, yes. Well, and you know what? This is one of those "and tell you something else" type moments. I think we should supply in the references the actual digital number. Well, man, all right, the number, the digital number.
Digital,
is another kind.
The digital number.
Wowzers! The number that equates modstate.com. There is no modstate.com. It's a number. There is no CNN.com. It's a number. ESPN, the whole gamut, they're all numbers.
Yeah.
Forget digital numbers. That was a gaffe. But the point is, the song remains the same. Every website, whatever the beautiful letters are, it's a number that you're assigned and you pay a fee annually. And you don't have to pay it annually. You can just pay it in bulk, years in advance as we do. But you still pay. You're leasing it.
So it essentially is almost like a free market, dare I say, forum, giant forum, the internet, a web, in which it does remain fair in the sense that everyone is paying for whatever domain number, digital number in this case, that you hold. And it is...
Such a dick.
I'm sorry, I did that.
You did.
I did. I like it.
Digital number. I'm never going to live that down. So, oh, DaVinny, it's okay. It's a digital number.
It's a digital number.
Write this down.
It's a numerical
number. For you economics majors out there.
And so the idea that... So the one thing that you did say, when you talk about where the internet is or what it is, the United States does hold, I believe, what? Did you say three root servers? Or
it's 4 out of 7. I mean, that was years ago, but yeah, it's roughly over half of the root servers, okay? So if we wanted to express some sort of veto power, but the bottom line is, it's obviously, it's not going to be headquartered. All this conspiracy theory, it's going to be headquartered in Libya now. No, the hell it is not.
No.
It's going to be headquartered in areas where, I don't know, the vast majority of e-commerce goes through. So worst case scenario would be Milan, Italy, or Paris, France. But no, if honestly the U.S. wanted to do something about it, we would. But this goes way beyond President Trump's pay grade. No offense to the office. This goes way beyond anybody currently in office.
Yeah, it's not to think that just because you step in office, you have this vast amount of wealth of knowledge that you just download when you get into the Oval Office is absurd. Who knows if Donald Trump even knew what net neutrality was when he stepped into office?
Oh, nobody knows net neutrality better than me.
That's true.
I can tell you that. Believe me.
Believe me. It's huge, the knowledge I have.
Whenever someone, not necessarily him, but whenever anybody says that, believe me, makes me go, should I?
Yeah, really? I was until you said that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Maybe it's just me. I haven't tended to follow up sincere statements with, believe me. But it really is, whatever.
I generally
digress every damn day.
I generally followed up with, you should look it up. Don't believe me. Don't believe me on anything I say. You should look it up all the time. I don't know what I'm talking about. I just read what smart people say.
Romney rules in 2012. You followed up. Not that you were being sincere, but you... sure knew how to agitate Mr. Olson.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Ruined our date night. Well, his date night.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Maybe I feel bad about that now.
Oh,
well,
man. Don't go Republican and don't go Catholic. Well, he was 2 for 2.
Indeed. So, all right, man. Well, we're encroaching on an hour, and the hour doesn't shut us off. But we will be back this week for one more podcast. And then for the weekend beat. We did miss it over the last weekend. I think we were feeling down a bit, and then it was the holiday weekend as well, so we kind of got wrapped up in some family stuff. But we will...
Kind of like President Trump would say, sad.
Sad. Sad. Yeah, it was sad. But we'll be back. We'll be back. Blah, blah, blah. We will be back this weekend with another weekend beat. We will be back this weekend with the weekend beat. John said au revoir, and I will say, we'll see you.